Well, we completed text 15 and 16 yesterday, and in the sequence of recording, text 17 is already recorded. And so I'm just going to summarize what we've done, including yesterday morning's class. We heard yesterday morning about Shonaka's appreciation for the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit as the audience or the hearer of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva Goswami as the speaker of Bhagavatam. And text 17 summarizes the benefit of hearing. The benefit of hearing is that it protects one. It lifts one up from the force of time. The force of time destroys everything. And one who becomes situated in transcendental consciousness from hearing the topics of Krishna, the soul becomes released from the forces of time, karma, modes of nature. Of course, the soul itself is not subject to those things in its ordinary condition. How can the soul be subjected to material laws? Because the soul is eternal. When the consciousness of the soul is invested in matter, then it does. At least it appears. It's bewildered or in illusion. So, hearing the topics of the personality of God, it liberates the soul is the idea. And the poetic way that it's being said is, both by rising and setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. So, each day that passes, duration of life is being shortened or death is approaching. For the devotee, each day that passes of hearing and chanting, eternal life is being approached. The body certainly will die, but eternal life is being approached. So time works differently for a transcendentalist than time works for the materialist. So it's a very beautiful way of describing the potent effects of hearing and chanting for the transcendentalist. It's a very strong encouragement. And very nice verse. So we're going to cover this morning text 18 and 19. The two themes of this verse and also of this section is the theme of nivritti, that's detaching oneself from the deluding ideas of trying to find happiness in a place of suffering, trying to find eternal happiness in a place that's only temporary. That's detachment. This is, again, just describing the whole of Canto 2. It's a strong theme in the whole of Canto 2, and it's like a refrain, it's repeating itself here. Detachment. those who are on this path of Krishna consciousness, the path of Bhagavat Marg, detachment from, progressive detachment from the deluding expectation that happiness comes from sense gratification. It's a theme, and it comes in here. And the other theme running parallel is the glory of hearing and chanting. This is Bhagavad Marg, hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, hearing and chanting. The glory of hearing and chanting to make one's way down the path towards Krishna. We'll go back to the other one. But you can't swiftly make your way down the path going to Krishna if you're holding on to expectations of material happiness. Yet he's from some Sparshajam Dukha. Dukha Yonaya Evate. Or the Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasati Thakur's story, a little narration to help understand how spiritual progress is impeded by material attachment, the wedding party story. Prabhupada told this so many times. I remember being illustrated in like a kind of like a cartoon with little sections in an very early Back to Godhead magazine. Wedding party. Bhaktisiddhanta told us at a Vrindavan parikrama when someone, the program that Bhaktisiddhanta had was during Kartik, every day of the Kartik month, just as is now going on in ISKCON, the Braj Mandal Parikrama would take place. And they would go from place to place and just stay out for one full month, just as Lokanath Maharaj is presently doing, Braj Mandal Parikrama, every Kartik. The Bhakti said, started by Bhakti Siddhanta, and in the daytime they would visit places of Krishna's pastimes, and in the evening he would hold a pandal. So one evening the question was asked, why is it that we see one person advancing very rapidly and side by side another person not advancing so rapidly? What's the reason? Although externally it appears they're doing the same things. And the answer Bhaktisiddhanta gave was the wedding party story. Punchline of the story is, if you hold on to material attachments, then you will not advance very swiftly. In fact, you won't advance. The wedding party story is, once upon a time, there was a wedding, and the groom's party was to go to the bride's home. And the way Prabhupada describes that in Bengal, the rivers are like highways. They go in boats and go from one place to another very swiftly by boat. So the groom's party got in a boat in the evening to go downstream to the place where the bride's home was. And then the plan was, as was the custom, they would be together in the evening, the wedding would take place. So when they took rest very jubilantly in the boat in the evening with the expectation that when they woke up they would be at the proper destination, they were very surprised when they found all night long they had been resting, but in the morning they were in the same place as where they started. And lo and behold, the anchor was still in place, even though the boatmen were rowing. But the idea then is, very simply, if we hold on to material attachment, then we won't make spiritual progress, even when we're making some endeavor for spiritual progress. So therefore, these two prongs side by side. One, nivritti. The other prong, hearing and chanting. And that's what we're getting in text 18 and 19. The translation reads, Do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? So, the idea, it's a very, very beautiful purport. It's almost like poetry. Prabhupada's writing is, in the second canto, he really shines with such nicely stated expressions in the Lilamrita, Prabhupada Lilamrita. It describes for us that even in Prabhupada's days as a grihastha, he was recognized by his godbrothers and by his spiritual master as being a really fantastic writer. On one Vyasa Puja day for Bhaktisiddhanta, Prabhupada wrote a fantastic poem, and simultaneously he made a speech on the same occasion. And both the speech and the poem were published in The Harmonist, and both of them got to the hand of Bhaktisiddhanta, who really appreciated Prabhupada's writing prowess. Particularly, Prabhupada had understood Bhaktisiddhanta's heart. Impersonal calamity thou hast removed. The personal feature of Krishna thou hast proved. Can't forget the third line. The message of Bhaktisiddhanta then became the message of Srila Prabhupada. Hearing very carefully from his spiritual master, we now offer our pranam mantras to Srila Prabhupada, Givishesha Sunyavani Pastyacha Desatarini. Following Bhaktisiddhanta, impersonal calamity thou hast removed. That Krishna is a person thou hast proved. So, Prabhupada's writing was so much appreciated by Bhaktisiddhanta that he told the editor of The Harmonist, whatever Abhai writes, print it. Just blanket, green light. His writing skill was a gift that Krishna had given him. And in the second canto, I've heard this class, Prabhupada speak on this verse so many times, 20 times. And I can just, in reading the purport, I can, in my mind, replay Pradyumna reading the purport again and again, and Prabhupada periodically interrupting and making comment. But it's so beautifully written. The materialistic man of the modern age will argue that life, or part of it, is never meant for the discussion of theosophical or theological arguments. Life is meant for the maximum duration of existence, for eating, drinking, sexual intercourse, making merry, and enjoying life. The modern man wants to live forever by the advancement of modern science, material science. And there are many foolish theories for prolonging life to the maximum duration. But the Srimad Bhagavatam affirms that life is not meant for so-called economic development or advancement of materialistic science, for the hedonistic philosophy of eating, mating, drinking, and merrymaking. Life is solely meant for tapasya, for purifying existence, so that one may enter into eternal life just after the end of the human form of life. So, practically what Prabhupada has done is he's given us in this paragraph the nivritti message, or the tapasya message, just as in the fifth canto. Tapo divyam putrapayena sattvam shudyat, the teaching of Rishabhdev, where he says essentially what Prabhupada is saying here is it's the message of the Bhagavatam. One should not waste one's life in doing those very same things that the animals do. Is there value, such great value in a prolonged duration of life as medical science or modern science wants to establish a long duration of life? What's the value of the long duration of life of a tree? It can outlive whatever the human form of life can accomplish. In the purport, Prabhupada speaks of the Imlital tree in Vrindavan. It is said to be 5,000 years old. Or in a botanical garden in Calcutta, there's a tree 500 years old, and so on. Many such trees. So a tree lives, can outlive us by far. So is that the goal? Live a long life? Do the trees not live? Then he compares, Lord Chaitanya's life was 48 years. Shankaracharya's life was 32 years. Compare that to trees of hundreds of years. Which is more valuable? A life of even a moment of full consciousness, or a long duration of life of ignorance? What's the goal of life? Material enjoyment? So, you say, how do you know that the tree is alive? It's not breathing. But then look at the blacksmith, the bellows of the blacksmith. It's breathing. And is that what life is, just breathing? Is that what life is? And you say, life is gone when there's no longer breathing. The bellows of a blacksmith are breathing. What is life? What is value? It's eating, drinking, and merrymaking. Having sex. Then he says, all around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? So, what's valuable in life? He wants us, that Shonaka is speaking, Vyasadeva is writing, they want us to turn our attention to the realm of the eternal that is accessed by hearing and chanting. So it's detachment, tapasya, nivritti, putting behind you, pushing to the side as your set of values, those things that are temporary, illusory, based on sense gratification, detachment. Strong message. It's repeated and repeated. Here it's coming up in this chapter, but in every one of these chapters, strong message. Detachment from worldly existence. But then, in that space that's opened by that detachment, the process of hearing and chanting. The more one can diminish this worldly pursuit, the more one's consciousness and time are freed up for hearing and chanting. So then text 19, the theme continues. Men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, praise those men who never listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Sri Krishna, the deliverer from evils. Again, this is a verse that those that are accustomed to hearing Srila Prabhupada speak, we've heard it hundreds of times. Hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. The Sanskrit is svavidvara hostrakarai saṃstita puruṣa-puṣu na yat karna pato peta jato nama vidagrajaha. I've heard it hundreds of times. So each one of these things, each one of the animals represents a certain material propensity. The dogs, Prabhupada likens to those that get modern education. Not a flattering comparison, but the dog without a master is helpless. So modern education reduces people to that position, Prabhupada repeatedly describes, where if the dog, he gets his, the educated person gets his degree, then he has to go door to door and wag his tail. Please throw me a bone. Please give me some work. And if he doesn't get a bone thrown or doesn't get some work, he starves. Likewise, Prabhupada has described this to the Shudra. The Shudra has to have someone employing him. And if he doesn't have someone employing him, he's finished. Yet happiness is having someone employ him. And Prabhupada was not appreciative of the modern education system that reduces the spirit of elevated persons to that of a Shudra or a dog. Then, vidvaraha, the varaha, just like Lord Varaha, this is the hog incarnation. Vid Varaha means stool-eating hog, where advancement is sometimes considered eating anything and everything, like the hog. The gourmet eating anything and everything. Yuck. But the devotee of the Lord understands there are very sattvic foods, and for that devotee, only those foods are of interest, and anything else is of no interest. So, the dogs, the hogs, the ushtra, or the camel, again, Prabhupada would like to speak about the camel. He enjoys the taste of his own blood as he's chewing on thorny twigs. And he's chewing and chewing and he likes. But what's happening is the thorny twigs are piercing his tongue, causing the tongue to bleed. And he likes the taste. So he keeps chewing the thorny twigs. Prabhupada likened that to the person who enjoys sex life. Because after all, sex life is nothing other than the transformation of the blood of the male. And this is like the camel sucking his own blood while chewing thorny twigs. So that's happiness, the happiness of sex life, like a camel enjoying his own blood. Hogs, dogs, camels, and the near favorite, the ass, the animal that works very, very hard, carrying heavy burdens, like Dainuka, the burden-carrying mentality, working very, very hard to achieve the necessities of life, when the necessities of life, by nature's arrangement, they're already available. But in our modern circumstance, not just modern circumstance, in the materialistic circumstance, one doesn't understand that the necessities of life are abundantly available. Instead, one has to work very hard. The world is filled with such mentality. So, the advice of the Bhagavatam is one should not fall prey to that animal-like mentality, the dog mentality, the hog mentality, the camel mentality, the ass mentality. And such animals praise those who are like themselves, animals. They choose as their heroes, or as their role models, or their leaders, or the persons unto whom they give their attention, the film stars, the athletes, the politicians, the celebrities of the world, are like these hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, persons that do not take advantage of the transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead as the essence of their life. Because the personality of Godhead is Gadagraja. Gadagraja. The deliverer from all evils. Gadagraja. So it's built into this word, Gadagraja. One who takes to the topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or the personality of Godhead, one is delivered from this animal existence, animal civilization. Just by this singular thing, focus upon regularly hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. It picks up the soul from this unfortunate condition. The glorification that Shukadev Goswami gives before he concludes his section is, who will not be attracted? Text 12 of this chapter. Who will not be attracted to these wonderful topics of the personality of Godhead? That's text 12. And text 19 tells us the hogs and the dogs and the camels and the asses, or people that are like such animals, don't have attraction. Rather, they have another attraction. They're attracted to so-called celebrities. This crazy civilization. Jeez. Because there was cast this in time, but there was one devotee family's son Sanjay something or other, who was one of the candidates in American Idol, and I never even heard what American Idol is until this thing happened. But maybe you all know what that program is, but it's some young talent, and they sing songs, and then people vote, who's your favorite singer or performer, and they involve the whole country in, you know, the mentality of America. They want to get involved, and so they vote for who is their American Idol. And it's just degraded madness, collective degraded madness. The whole country, from what I gather, is swept up in who is going to be the winner of the American Idol contest. Nothing to do with anything of value. But because people are so bored, they've got to come up with something to draw their attention. It's just wasting time completely. And that's our civilization. And that's the Bhagavatam's message. Why should one waste one's time in such absolutely fruitless endeavors that are praiseworthy for the hogs, dogs, camels, and asses? And so the Bhagavatam is not very appreciative and complimentary of godless civilization. And a polished godless civilization is no better than a gross godless civilization. But persons think otherwise. Do the same things that the animals do in a polished way. That's advancement of civilization. Bhagavatam doesn't care for that. That's to be dismissed in favor of that which is of lasting value. Powerful message. And while the message is very powerful, even when hearing it, it's so easy to get swept along by the strong current of material existence. But it really takes careful hearing of this message and regular hearing of this message to receive the full protection that this literary incarnation, Srimad Bhagavatam, is providing us. So any discussion?
Guru Maharaj, how to...
Go ahead.
Maharaj, this is more of a how-to-do kind of question. In the past, I guess, three or four classes, you've been, stressing on the importance of regular Bhagavad Seva. And if you can just give us some guidelines of, how to get the best out of it. How to get the best out of reading the Bhagavatam and, kind of absorbing the mood.
Well, what comes to mind is just repeating things that I've been saying. But that is with regularity, with eagerness, systematic, follow some study system, not just irregular here and there, but, you know, so were there some enthusiasm, some eagerness behind the effort, that's where you're going to get the most. And those that have, I can make a practical recommendation of taking assistance from those who have already done that, or have made that effort, systematic, careful, enthusiastic listening. Burijan is an exemplar in that area, and he's just published his first four cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, kind of summary. Unveiling the Lotus Feet is the title. So it's like with Bhagavad Gita, the Surrender Unto Me book that Burijan has put together. It's just like a very nice companion, along with studying Srimad Bhagavatam, having the association of someone who has very, very carefully studied the Bhagavatam, and with commentary of acharyas and highlighting key points and appreciations, and just a nice companion. Another is to discuss with others, just like we're doing right now, in the company of others who like to absorb themselves in Srimad Bhagavatam, discuss the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's a very natural and even an intended way of assimilating the message of the Bhagavatam. But I would say practically, from experience, as you regularly read, it just grows on you. It feels right. It feels good. The eagerness and attraction just grows, because it's Srimad Bhagavatam. It's this glorious, beautiful composition. I don't know if you, it's like, how do you increase your appreciation for tasting nice prasadam? Well, start regularly tasting nice prasadam, and then, you know, it kind of happens naturally. Wow, this is good. One's taste, transcendental taste, becomes refined by contacting this transcendental literature. And then, you know, other stuff, just, it's not attractive. Whatever distracting literature that you may have in the past had some inclination to go and browse. No attraction. No comparison. So it's experiential is what I'm saying. Just do it regularly. And I'm emphasizing this doing so with great eagerness for two reasons. One is it's what the Bhagavatam says is an important component in regular reading, is eagerness for the subject matter. But also from regular reading, I have some eagerness. Just sharing that eagerness. It's so nice. Bhavoshara, Shotra, Manobhirama. It's like medicine. But then it's not, you know, medicine is not like medicine. It's just sublime medicine. So by regularly reading Srimad Bhagavatam, it becomes an inextricable part of life. It's like chanting. Can you imagine? I've often thought this. How do people live? How do they do it without chanting? How do they go through life without chanting? How do they go through day after day after day? And so chanting just becomes a given within our life. You can't imagine being without it. And same with Srimad Bhagavatam. It's just perfectly natural for a life of devotion to Krishna. It's so fortifying. You find that it is with you all the time. In so many practical exchanges of life. So when you have that experience, it increases the eagerness. It's like self-fulfilling. Borrowing the expression, just do it. Very attractive.
Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj.
Sachi Kumar, you have something? Oh, Sachi Kumar.
A little bit covered in the answer that you gave, Guru Maharaj. If I have filters, how to overcome them?
If you have filters?
Uh-huh.
What do you mean filters?
Like I might be hearing for a long time, but still I'll be doing the same things. Like, say, for example, when I hear that, I have to be very enthusiastic, but I don't put in practice. So how the hearing will help me to overcome those
so-called
filters.
Yeah. Nice word, filters. Well, that was in the class last night also. Someone was asking. I do, but I don't feel like I'm giving, and I don't feel like I'm receiving. And that's just because we're covered or conditioned by countless lifetimes of ignorance. But if you... It's one of the reasons that I gave two reasons why I'm saying eagerness, because there's scriptures there, I feel eagerness, but it's also by repeating it, then it gets, the message can get through. Hey, I gotta be eager. Yeah, not just do it, but I gotta be eager as I do it, to get the fullest benefit. But then how do I resource this eagerness? That part of it is being in the company of those who are eager, and you hear their enthusiasm. Like you asked the question the other day, how do you impart enthusiasm to others, and that's by being enthusiastic. Yes?
Yes.
Remember that discussion?
Yes.
If you're excited, if you're genuinely excited about something, it draws attention. You know, like a child with a toy. They're really wrapped up in that toy, then another child gets interested in that toy. Just because one child, and maybe it's like meaningless nothing. Or to speak of something that's of real substance. So associate with those that have that excitement. And when you, the fact that you've heard and you're striving for this eagerness, that's the step. And just keep striving. Keep striving. there cannot be, Prabhupada said this, there cannot be progress without enthusiasm. It's one of the, when Peter Berwatch does his leadership thing, he makes this point very strongly. Enthusiasm. And he, you know, he's an enthusiastic guy. But you gotta be enthusiastic. But how do you get enthusiastic? By understanding that you have to be enthusiastic. Okay, you gotta be enthusiastic. Can't be complacent. Complacent is mode of ignorance. Enthusiastic. Not passionate. Not the shooting star. But sustained effort that's on a spiritual platform, that's enthusiastic. We're not going to be in that sustained enthusiasm if we're in the material platform. Sometimes we're feeling enthusiastic and sometimes we're not feeling enthusiastic because we're on the material platform. We're carrying material conceptions of self and even what it means to be enthusiastic. So, just continuing with sincere effort carries one to that position. Sincere effort by right means. We're so fortunate that we have Prabhupada's mercy in the form of his literature and his example, his perfect life. What a gift to the world. We just stay with that and try to be very sincere in the efforts that we make. When you're experiencing the taste of Krishna consciousness, it's easy to be eager. Then that eagerness doesn't fade. When purification starts to come, that eagerness is ever increasing. That's the spiritual platform. Keep striving. Something else?
I was wondering if you could speak something about, I've seen that people are always asking about solutions for this difficulty, that difficulty, and when the emphasis is made of regularly hearing, reading, they don't really do that, and then they come back with another lesson and everything comes back to the same root. How help such individuals?
Without spiritual advancement, it's gonna keep going back to the looking for material solutions. Rather than taking shelter in Krishna. It's make adjustments. Manipulate what's outside. I said this to one devotee about 2 months ago and it's really changed him because he grabbed a hold of the message. He was thinking, asking for my opinion or my guidance in several things, career things and other things, his preaching field, and it seemed clear to me that there was this, I'm not feeling right. Maybe I should look outside. Maybe adjust this. maybe you're just that. So, he didn't say it that way, but that was the impression. So I said, you know, be very careful to not go to making adjustments outside when the real thing is there's something inside that needs to be addressed. Something internal rather than external adjustments. And this is Bhaktisiddhanta's teaching, and it's not that this individual hadn't heard this before, but it really struck somehow. And since then, that's what he's been doing. He's been looking inside to see how can I make my consciousness more what it should be. And when one's consciousness is more what it should be, what ideally I would like it to be, then matter seems to move on its own. I mean, Krishna directs the configurations of matter to be what they are and to change. So, you know, now, how can, from your question specifically was, in interacting with others that also seem to be in that pattern of not taking the spiritual solution, but looking consistently, persistently for material solutions or material adjustments. That's not it.
Yeah.
That's it?
Just that it seems like they want the spiritual.
Yes, of course. We want the spiritual, but we just, by habit, it goes to the other. It's just habit. You know, it's kind of like mindlessness. Some sincerity is there, but there's a degree of mindlessness. So, how we can be of service to such persons is our own example and our own convictions. It's not like twisting their arm hard enough so they say, ouch, okay, I'll do it. And then, you know, there's resentment if you do like that. And it doesn't lead to change. Or, you know, it doesn't lead to a transformation, the kind of enduring change. So it's repeating the message with the conviction that's in our heart and showing by example. When we experience that two things, a real contentment, yena ma supersedati. Experience that real contentment. And at the same time, look at that, all those configurations of material energy, they're changing. And I didn't do a darn thing. It's just, things are working out. Wow. It both strengthen faith. It's an issue of faith. So, yes, there's a desire to have that consciousness, but I don't have the faith that I can commit to Krishna in a qualitative way. And so then it's this duratyaya position, a struggle. But, no, that's anishtita bhakti. What can you do? There are things that I know I should do and I don't do them. There are things that I know I shouldn't do and I continue to do them. It's anishtita bhakti. One's faith is not yet strong. So how to help someone whose faith is not yet strong to become strong? By carrying strong faith and closely associating with that person. By the friendship amongst devotees, genuine loving exchanges amongst devotees, that gives strength to go to a more faithful position. And when doing that, you know, being very attentive and very sensitive to the dynamic of the relationships, because my experience is when you don't say something, people, you know, wonder why you're not saying something. When you do say something, they wonder why you're saying something. Now, people are very guarded and protected in their little space. While they want association, they simultaneously don't want, or they want in some way that you don't even know how they want it. And so one has to be very sensitive to relationships, the dynamic of relationships, and they're all variegated, different, you know, everybody's different. Different expectations. So, from our side as, compassionate individuals wanting to be of some assistance, it's a very delicate thing. It's wanting without imposing, wanting to be of a resource for someone without imposing, and then knowing if the relationship is right, then you can be of assistance, you can be of service to the other person. So then there's trust in the relationship. Then you can be of some more meaningful service. So then it goes back. So charity begins at home. It's our own hearts need to be pure, free from stuff, and the desire to be in service should be in the mood of service, not any other mixture of moods. And be very sensitive to the dynamics of the relationship, what the other person is feeling. It's challenging. It's a nice challenge. Establishing loving relationships with devotees and purity in our own heart. And then we can be servants to others. It really comes down to loving relationships. The loving relationship with devotees can then facilitate loving relationship with Krishna. And it's for this reason, Prabhupada said, that he created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and established temples and sanghas of Vaishnavas to foster loving relationships. Because it's through the medium of those loving relationships amongst devotees that our loving relationship with Krishna becomes manifest or revealed. And it's meant to be like that, it's natural. But just like the verses describing, the verses that we read, there's so much going on in this other arena of meaningless stuff and values and ways of doing things and conditioned tendencies. My goodness, it's just boggling, mind-boggling. With all good intention, all that's going on. As much as we can be pure, then we can be instruments. This came out in a class in Houston, I think in a Anuttama commented specifically. There was some question about how can we be better servants to the mission of Krishna consciousness, and the answer, a shorter answer, was by empowerment and also by purity. And the empowerment is already there by the instruction of Prabhupada that we assist him. So the empowerment is there. What's missing, or where there's a lacking, is purity. Our own purity. Where there is purity, like Prabhupada's purity, then things change. Things become transformed by his giving his association. Impure souls became purified. There's a challenge. Become more pure. Oh boy. Oh boy. Okay. Become more pure. Then the sincere desire to be of some service has no impediment. Well, the impediment is our own impurity. That's all of us. Anything else? Someone on the line out there have a question? Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.